Welcome to the Immeasurable Podcast at the Krishnamurti Center in Ojai, California. This series reflects upon Krishnamurti's work and how it directly impacts the listener. The invitation is to inquire together into the fundamental nature of our existence.
This is the 14th dialogue between Jay Krishnamurti and David Bohm at Brockwood Park, 1980.
We talked the other day about a mind that's entirely free from all movement, from all the things that thought has put there, and all the thought has brought about and has experienced in the past and the future and so on. But before we go into that, I would like to ask, what is materialism?
Materialism.
Well, what is man is caught in this materialistic attitude and values and experiences. What is the nature of materialism?
Well, I mean, consider it, first of all, materialism is the name of a certain philosophical point of view.
I don't mean that.
No.
I don't mean that certain philosophical sayings, but I want to find...
The belief that matter is all there is, you see, it isn't that...
Yes, I want to go into that a little bit.
Yeah.
That is, all nature, all human beings react physically. This reaction is sustained by thought. And thought is a material process. So, reaction, as in tree, in nature, in animals, in human beings, is the materialistic response.
Well, I think, see, the word materialistic quite right there.
No.
It's the response of matter, you see. But
response of matter. Let's put it there. All right.
Yeah.
Response of matter.
Right.
That's better. Let me repeat it again, let it be clear. We are talking about having an empty mind. And we have come to that point when the wall has been broken down and this emptiness and what lies beyond it or through it and so on. We'll come to that. But before we begin with that, as I said, is all reaction matter?
Matter in movement, right?
Matter in movement.
Well, that's the suggestion. You could say that there's a lot of evidence in favor of that, that science has found a tremendous number of reactions which are due to the nerves.
And all that. Would you call matter and movement is the reactions which exist in all organic matter?
Yes, it's necessary. All matter, as we know it, goes by the law of action and reaction. You see,
Every action
has a corresponding reaction.
Reaction.
Right.
So, action, reaction, and reaction is a material process.
Yes.
So, as thought is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to go beyond it is the question.
Yes.
That's the point.
Yes. Now, before we... some people might say that it has no meaning to go beyond it. See, that would be the philosophy of materialism.
That would be the belief
that it has no meaning to go beyond that.
Beyond it.
Right.
Quite right. But if one is merely living in that area, it is very, very shallow.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
It has really no meaning at all. But if one recognizes thought as a material process and reaction and action is matter and movement.
Yes. Perhaps one should say one other thing, that some people have said matter is not merely action and reaction, but it may have a creative movement. say that matter may create new forms.
But matter may create new forms, but it's still within that area.
Yes. Well, let's try to make it clear what is the difference. So it becomes, we have to see there are very subtle forms of materialism which might be difficult to pin down.
Let's begin. Would you consider or agree or see that thought is a material process?
Yes, though some people might argue that it is both material and something beyond material, you see.
I know. I have discussed it. Yeah. I know. But it is not.
Yes, how can we say that simply to make
because
it clear?
Because any movement of thought is a material process, whether you assert it is beyond.
Yeah, well, we have to make it clear so it's not a matter of authority, you know, to say that.
Oh, no, of course not.
As one observes, you're saying that from observation one sees that thought is a material process. Now, how would one see that?
I mean how one would be aware of aware that it's a material process. I think that's fairly clear. There is an experience, an incident recorded, which becomes knowledge. From that knowledge, thought arises and action takes place.
Yes. All right, so we say that thought is that, and
Any assertion that's beyond is still thought.
Yes, it's still coming from the background.
Background, yes.
So if we say that something new coming into there is not part of this process, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yes. If there is to be something new, thought as a material process must end.
Mm.
Obviously.
Yes, and then it may take it up later.
Right? Later, yes. We'll see what happens later.
Yeah.
So could we say all reaction and action from that reaction, is movement of matter?
Yes, very subtle movement of matter.
Huh?
Very subtle movement of
matter. Very subtle movement of matter. So as long as one's mind is within that area, it must be a movement of matter.
Yes, well, let's proceed from there then.
Huh?
Let's proceed from there.
From there. So is it possible to go for the mind to go beyond reaction? That's the next step, obviously.
Yes.
As we said yesterday morning in our discussion with the group, one gets irritated, and that's first reaction. Then the reaction to that, second reaction to that, I must not. Then the third reaction I must control, or justify, or whatever it is. So it's constantly action and reaction. Can one see it's a movement, a continuous movement without an ending?
Yes, although, you see, let me say what it looks like. The reaction actually is continuous.
Yes.
But it seems at a certain moment to have ended, and the next moment appears to be a new moment. You see,
but it's still
it's
reaction.
Still the same, but it presents itself
of course
as
it
different.
That's right.
That it's always the same, though it's...
It's exactly always, the same, always.
But it presents itself as always different, right?
Of course, of course.
Always
but
new, right?
That's just it. You say something, I get irritated.
Yeah.
But that irritation is a reaction.
Yes, it seems to be something suddenly new.
Suddenly new, but it's not.
It's not. But one has to see, one has to be aware of that, you see.
Of course, of course.
But normally, generally the mind tends to be not aware of it, right?
But after discussing a great deal and talking, you know, one can...
We are attentive to it. Right?
Yeah, we're sensitive and alert to the question.
Yeah.
So there is an ending to reaction. If one is watchful, attentive, understand not only logically the heaven insight into this reacting process all the time, it can of course come to an end. That's why it's very important, I think, to understand this.
Yes.
Before we discuss what is an empty mind, if there is something beyond, or in that very empty mind, mm-hmm. there is some other quality.
Yeah.
So is that empty mind a reaction? You follow, sir?
Yeah.
Reaction to the problems of pain and pleasure and suffering, and reaction to that is to escape from all this into some state of nothingness.
Mm. Yes, well, the mind can always do that. It can become
invent.
It can fail to notice pain and pleasure.
Of course. So that becomes an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we are not talking, because we went into the question of illusions and said desire is the beginning of illusion.
Yeah.
Now, we have come to the point that this quality of emptiness is not a reaction. That must be absolutely sure.
Mm-hmm.
Right, sir?
Yes.
Now, before we go further into it, is that possible to have a mind that is really completely empty of all the things that thought has put together?
Yes, well, when thought ceases to react, I mean,
that's it.
Yes, now, the mind being material, the thought being a material process, so on one hand, you could say perhaps the reaction is due to the nature of matter, which is continually reacting and moving. But then how does matter, is it affected, is matter affected by that this insight?
I don't quite follow. I understand. Does insight
mm-hmm.
affect the cells of the brain which contain the memories?
Yes, the memories are continually reacting, moving,
yeah.
just as the air and the water, everything
of
around
course.
Us. And
of course.
Now, if nothing happened, we should say, why would that ever stop?
Quite. Of course, sir, if I don't react, I'm paralyzed.
Yeah.
One is paralyzed. But to be reacting continuously is also a form of paralysis.
Yes, well, the wrong kind of reaction.
Yeah.
The reaction around the psychological
structure.
We're
talking about psychology, yeah. always.
So, but now, assuming that the reaction around the psychological structure has begun in mankind, no, why should it ever stop? You see, because one reaction makes another, another. So
it's
you would
like
expect,
a chain. Endless
you would expect
chain.
It to go on forever unless
yes.
something will stop it, right?
Nothing will stop it.
Right.
Only the insight into the nature of reaction ends psychological reaction.
Yes, but then you're saying that matter is affected by
insight.
What is beyond, by insight, which is beyond
That's
matter, right?
Beyond matter. That's what we remember.
Yeah.
We discussed this matter also
mm-hmm.
in Ohio.
Yes.
So, is this emptiness within the brain itself, or something thought has conceived as being empty?
Mm-hmm.
One must be very clear
yeah.
on this.
Well, at first thought, you know, whatever is discussed, and no matter what the question is, the thought begins to want to do something about
yeah.
it, because thought feels that it can always make a contribution.
Right.
And that it might be useful, right? So thought in the past did not understand that there are areas where it has no useful contribution to make. So, but it keeps on in the habit of trying to saying emptiness is very good. Therefore, thought says, "I will."
Of course,
try to do something to help bring about the emptiness, as thought is trying to be helpful, right?
No, but we've been through all that.
Yeah.
We have seen the nature of thought. what's its movement, time, mm-hmm. and all that. We've been through all that. I want to find out, I've come to a point when is this emptiness within the mind itself or beyond it?
I don't think that's right. What do you mean by the mind, you say?
Because the mind being the whole, emotions, thought, consciousness, the brain, the whole of that is the mind.
The mind has been used in many ways, that word. So
yes.
Now you're using it in a certain way, which is that it represents thought, feeling, desire, and will, and the whole material process.
Yes, whole material process.
Which people have called non-material.
Yes. Quite. I call it the mind is the whole material process.
Yes, which is going on in the brain and the nerves.
Nerves, the whole of it.
Yes.
The whole structure. Now, one can see this reaction, materialistic reaction can end. And the next question I'm asking is that emptiness within or without? And without in the sense, it's elsewhere.
Where would it be?
I don't think it would be elsewhere, but I'm just putting it.
Oh. Well, any such thing as part of the material process. I say here and there are distinctions made within the material process.
That's right. That's why I wanted to get at. Mm-hmm. It is there. It is in the mind itself, not outside.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, what is the next step? Is that emptiness... does that emptiness contain nothing? Not a thing?
Yes, well, not a thing. Thing meaning anything which has form and structure, stability.
Structure, that's right. Form, structure, reaction, actually.
It's stability and reaction.
Yes. Yeah. Form, structure, capacity, reaction, all that. Or it contains none of that.
Right.
Huh? Then what is it? Is it then total energy?
Yes, movement of energy.
Movement of energy. It's not movement of reaction.
Well, it's not movement of things reacting to each other. As the world can be regarded as made up of a large number of things which react to each other.
Yes.
And that's one kind of movement. But we're saying that it's a different kind of movement.
It's entirely different.
Which has no thing in it.
No thing in it, and therefore not of time.
Mm.
Right? Is that possible? Or are we just indulging in imagination?
Right.
Indulging in some kind of romantic, hopeful, pleasurable sensation. I don't think we are.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've been through all that, step by step by step, right up to this point. So we are not deceiving ourselves. Now we say that emptiness has no center, right?
Mm.
As the me, and all the reactions so on. It is in that emptiness there is a movement of timeless energy.
Yes, well, when you say timeless energy, now the... We could go over and say that we've said already that thought and time are the same. That
yes, of course.
And then you're saying that time can only come into a material process, right?
Time can only come in material process. That's right.
And now, if we have an energy that's timeless but nevertheless moving,
yes, it's not static either.
Yes,
sort of.
It's flowing. It's moving.
Right? It's moving.
But yes, now what is the movement, you think?
So, what is movement? From here to there.
That's one form.
One form. Or from yesterday to today.
Yeah.
And from today to tomorrow.
And that's, yes.
Another movement.
Yes, and there's various kinds of movement like that.
And so, what is movement? Is there a movement? I want to question it. Is there a movement which is not movement?
Well, just me.
You understand? Is there a movement which has no beginning and no end? Because thought has a beginning and an end.
Well, except, you see, we could say that the movement of matter might have no beginning and no end, the reactive movement.
Yeah.
We're not talking about either.
No, I'm not talking about that.
But you see, so it's not enough to say it has no beginning and no end, right?
We must go back then to the other. That is, thought has a beginning,
mm-hmm.
and thought has an ending. There is a movement of matter as reaction, and the ending of that reaction.
Yes, in the brain.
In the brain. That there are these various kinds of movements.
Mm-hmm.
That's all we know. And someone comes along and says there's a totally different kind of movement. But to understand that, I must be free of the movement of thought, material, and all that, movement of time. To understand a movement that is not...
Well, not only... See, it has no, there are two things. It has no beginning and no end, but also it is not determined as a series of successions from the past.
Yes, no causation.
It's not a series of causes, one following another.
Of course. No causation.
But see, matter can be looked at as a series of causes, though it may not be adequate. But
Yeah, I understand.
But now we're saying this movement has no beginning and no end, and it is not the result of a series of causes, one following another, without end, right?
No. So, sir, I want to... I want to understand, verbally even, a movement that is not a movement.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm making...
Then why is it called a movement if it is not a movement?
Because it's not still.
Yes.
It's not... It's active. It's
active,
dynamic.
Yes, it's energy.
And it's tremendous. Therefore, it can never be still. But it has got in that energy a stillness.
Yes, the energy itself is... I think that we have to say that the ordinary language does not convey it properly, but... The energy itself is still and also moving, is what you're saying.
Yes, but in that movement, it is a movement of stillness.
The movement of stillness, right.
Does it sound crazy?
The movement can be said to emerge from
stillness
and fall back into stillness.
That's right. That's right. See, that's what it is. So that is... We said this mind, this emptiness is in the mind. That emptiness has no cause and no effect. It's not a movement of causation. It's not movement of thought, time.
Space,
it's not a movement of material reactions. None of that. Which means, is the mind capable of that extraordinary stillness without any movement? And when there is so completely still, there is a movement out of it.
Yes.
It sounds crazy.
Well, it needn't sound crazy. I mean, in fact, I think I mentioned before that people have even, some people have had this notion in the past, such as Aristotle, we discussed in...
I didn't know.
He talked about the unmoved mover. That is the way he tried to describe God, do you see?
God, no. I'm not
describing... We don't want to describe God. But I mean, but some sort of notion similar to this has been held in the past by various people. But since then, it has gone out of fashion, I think.
I think out of fashion. Let's bring it into fashion, shall we?
I'm not saying that Aristotle had the right idea. It was merely that he was considering something somewhat similar, but probably different in many ways.
Yes, but it was it an intellectual concept or an actuality?
This is very hard to tell because so little is...
Therefore, we don't have to bring in Aristotle.
Well, I merely wanted to say that, to point out that it wasn't crazy, because at least other very respectable people have considered it.
I'm glad. I'm glad to be assured I'm not crazy.
Because you did ask if it was crazy. You see.
And is that movement out of stillness, is that the movement of creation?
Yeah.
Not the creation which the artists and the poets and the writers and all painters call creation. To me, that's not creation. That's just a capacity and skill and memory and knowledge operating there. Here, I think this creation is not expressed in form.
But yes, well, that's important, because usually we think creation is expressed as form or as structure.
Structure, yes.
Now this is difficult. See, what does it mean, right?
We've gone beyond being crazy, so we can. Would you say, sir, this movement, not being of time, is eternally new?
Yes, it's eternally new, in the sense that the creation is eternally new, right?
Creation is eternally new.
Right.
See, I think that's what the artists are trying to find out.
Well, yes, that's true, yeah.
Therefore, they indulge in all kinds of various absurdities. But to come to that point when the mind is absolutely silent, absolutely again.
Well, yes.
Completely silent. Out of that silence, there's this movement, which is always new, eternally new.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment when that movement is expressed.
Yes. Well, the first expression is in thought, right? That may be useful, but then it gets fixed, right?
Yeah.
Then it may become a barrier.
I was told, you see, once by an Indian philosopher, Indian scholar, that before they began to sculpture a head or of a god or whatever it is, they had to have deep meditation. Go into deep meditation. And when at the right moment they took up the hammer and the chisel.
To have it come out of the emptiness.
Emptiness.
Well, there's another point. You see, the Australian Aborigines draw figures in the sand and they don't, not permanent, right?
Yes. That's right.
Let's see if our thought could be looked at that way. You see, the marble is already too static.
Static,
it stays there for thousands of years. And So although the original sculptor may have understood, the people who follow see it as a fixed form, you see.
So what, next thing is, what relationship has all that to my daily life? What way does that act through my action, through my ordinary physical responses? There are no psychological responses, mm-hmm. because but there are physical responses,
yeah.
to noise, to pain, to various forms of disturbances, physical disturbances. What relationship has the physical to that silent movement? I don't...
Yes, well, insofar as the mind is silent, then the thought is orderly. Right?
Yes, but it is orderly.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting on to something.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that silent movement, which is an ending newness, is total order of the universe?
Well, yes, we could consider that.
Huh?
Yes, we could consider that the order of the universe emerges from this silence,
yes,
and emptiness. And
yes.
Continually
so,
created.
So what is... What's my relationship... What is the relationship of this mind to the universe?
The particular mind?
No, mind, I'm talking.
Mind in general.
No. Mind, the general and the particular went through, and beyond that, there is the mind.
Well, that's what you say, that's universal then.
That's the universal mind.
Yes.
That universal mind, I don't like to use the word universal.
But I mean, it's in the sense that which is beyond the particular in general would usually be called the universal.
Yes.
But it may be that the word is difficult.
Can you find a different word? Global? No.
No, well...
A mind that is beyond a particular... No.
Well, you could say it's the source, it's the... It's the source, you know, the essence. I don't know what you could say, but... it has been called the absolute. And
I don't want to use that word absolute either.
No, but in the sense of being... the absolute literally means that which is... free of all limitation, of all, of all dependence, right?
Yes. All right. We agree that absolute means free from all dependence, from all limitation.
Yes, from all relationship, then.
Yeah. Then we use that. All right.
Well, I mean, it has unfortunate connotations. Right?
Of course. Let's use that word for the moment, for our convenience in our dialogue. There is this absolute stillness, and that in that stillness, or from that stillness, there is a movement, and that movement is everlastingly new. And is that mind, what is the relationship of that mind to the universe?
To the universe of matter?
Yes, universe.
The whole universe.
Whole universe.
Yeah.
Matter, trees, nature.
Yes, people.
Man.
Yeah.
The heavens.
Yes, well, that's an interesting question, you see.
Yeah. Now, that is in order. The universe is in order.
Yes.
Whether it's destructive or constructive, it's still order.
Well, it's necessary order. You see, the order has the character of being... being absolutely necessary, in the sense it cannot be otherwise. It is
quite.
It has no the order that we usually know is not absolutely necessary. It could be changed. You see, it could depend on something else. Right? Any ordinary order is contingent, as I say. It depends on something.
No, the eruption of a volcano.
Yeah.
Is order.
It's order of the whole universe.
Of course.
It's necessary, considering the whole universe, it cannot be otherwise.
Otherwise, quite. Now, in the universe, there is order.
Mm-hmm.
And this mind, which is still, is completely in order.
That's the deep mind, the absolute.
Yeah, the absolute mind. So then is this mind the universe?
Well, that's a question. Yeah, in what sense is that the universe?
Huh?
And we have to understand in what sense and what it means to say that, you see.
Or it means, is there a division, a barrier, or division between this absolute mind and the universe?
Yes.
Or both are the same.
Both are the same, right.
That's what I want to say.
We want to say that we have either duality of mind and matter.
Matter, that's it.
Or they are both the same.
Right? Is that presumptuous?
Well, not necessarily, no. I mean, these are just two possibilities. I mean,
I want to be quite sure we are not treading upon something which is really neutral. A very, very, very subtle, great care. You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, if we go back to the body, you know, and say, we've said the body is physical, it's material.
Yes.
And we said the mind of the body, the mind of which is in the body, which is thought,
general
feeling, desire,
all
thought, feeling, desire, will, the general and the particular.
Absolutely.
Are part of the material process.
Material process.
They are not different from the body, right?
That's right. All the reactions are material
process. And therefore what we usually call the mind is not different from what we usually call the body.
Right, quite.
Now you're making this much greater and saying, consider the whole universe.
Whole universe.
And we say what we call the mind in that universe is it different from what we call the universe itself
that's
in
right.
matter.
That's right. You see, that's why I feel in our daily life there must be order.
Mm.
Not the order of thought.
Well, thought is a limited order. It's
dependent,
relative, right?
Yeah. So I have to have an order that is...
Well, it's free of limitation.
Free of limitation, yeah. In my daily life, I have to have that, which means no conflict whatsoever. No contradiction, all the rest of that.
Well, if we take the order of thought, you see, when it's rational, it's in order. Now, in contradiction, the order of thought has broken down. It has reached its limit, right?
Yeah.
That thought works until it reaches a contradiction, and that's the limit.
So, if in my daily life there is complete order in which there is no disturbance, what is the relationship of that order to the never-ending order?
Yes.
Can that silent movement of order, of that extraordinary something, can that affect my daily life when I have deep inward psychological order?
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Yeah. Yes, well, we've said, for example, the volcano is a manifestation of the whole order of the universe. You know,
absolutely. Tiger killing
everything. So then the question is whether the human being in his daily life can be similar.
Similar, that's it. If not, I don't see what's the point of the other.
Well, it has no point to the human being.
Yeah, that's it.
Then you would fall back into the human being trying to make his own purpose out of himself, you know, out of his thoughts, right?
Yeah.
You see, I think some people would say, oh, who cares about the universe? All we care about is our own society, what we're doing, right? But then that falls down because it's full of contradiction.
Of course, obviously, it's only thoughtless.
It's too small, yeah.
So, that universe, which is in total order, does affect my daily life.
Yes. I think, you know, let's suppose people or, say, scientists might ask how. You see that See, people might say, okay, I understand that the universe is constituted of matter. The laws of matter affect your daily life, but we're saying it is not so clear how it affects the mind. You know, how the mind is, that there is this absolute mind which affects the daily life.
What is my daily life? A series of reactions and disorders, right? I'm making very quick, brief. That is that.
Well, it's mostly that.
Mostly. And there's always, thought is always struggling to bring order within that.
Yes.
And when it does that, it's still disorder.
Because thought is limited.
Of course, it's always
limited by its own contradiction.
Contradiction, of course. Hmm. So it is always, thought is always creating disorder. Mm-hmm. Because it's itself limited.
And as soon as it tries to go beyond the limit, that is disorder.
That is disorder, right. I've understood, I've gone into it, I have an insight into it, so I have a certain kind of order in my life. But that order is still limited.
Yes.
I recognize that. And as long as matter, living this existence, I say it's limited.
Yes, now some people will accept that and say that, why should you have more? You
say, well, I'm not having slow. More.
But I mean, let's see carefully. You see that some people would say, I would be happy if we could bring this limited order, saying we have so much disorder now. If we could live in the ordinary material life with real order.
I say, let's do it.
Let's do it. Man.
Of course that must be done.
Yes.
But in the very doing of it, one has to realize it's limited.
Yes. Yes, even the highest order you can produce is limited.
Limited.
Right.
And the mind realizes its limitation and says, look, let's go beyond it.
Yes, well, let's go. So why? You see, some people would say, why not be happy within those limits, continually extending them? You know, saying we can discover new thoughts, you know, new orders.
Yes.
The artist will discover new forms of art, the scientist, new kinds of science. You see, some people.
But it is always limited.
Yes, well, we have to go slowly, you see, because I think some people would go this far and then say, that's all that is possible, you see.
Yes. And like the human condition, let's accept it.
Do the best we can within it. They say we could do much better than we're doing.
Yes, yes. But it's still the human condition.
Yes.
Little reformed, little better.
Well, some people would say enormously reformed, you see.
Yes. But it's still limited.
Yes. Well, let's try to make it clear, because what is wrong with the limitation, you see?
In that limitation, there's no freedom. There's a limited freedom.
Yes, we say eventually we come to the boundary of our freedom, that something, let's try to put it clearly, something not known to us makes us react, and we will become, this will therefore inevitably fail, because through reaction we will fall back into contradiction.
Yes, but when I see, sir, that I'm always moving within a certain area.
Yeah. And that error, then therefore I'm under the control of the forces.
Forces and the limited.
Yeah.
The mind inevitably rebels against that.
Well, the mind, that's an important point. We see that the mind wants freedom, right?
Obviously.
Yes, it says that's the highest value. Right? But do we accept that as saying that's just a fact, right?
Yes. A prisoner, I realize I'm a prisoner within this limitation.
Yeah, some people get used to it and say, I accept the limitation.
I accept the limitation. I won't accept it.
Right.
My mind says, there must be freedom from prison. I am a prisoner, and the prison is very nice, but very cultured, very all the rest of it, but it's still limited, and it says there must be freedom beyond all this.
Yes, now which mind says this? Is it the particular mind of the human being? Or?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Who says there must be freedom? Oh, that's very simple. The very pain, the very suffering, the very all that demands that we go beyond.
Yeah, so you're saying that this particular mind, even though it accepts limitation, finds it painful.
Painful.
It may cover
up
the pain.
Of course, I could.
And therefore, this particular mind feels somehow that it's not right.
Yes.
It can't avoid it. Right? There seems to be a necessity of freedom, if you want to put it that way.
Freedom is necessary.
It's necessary, yeah.
I mean, any hindrance to freedom is retrogression.
Yeah.
Right.
And that necessity is not an external necessity due to reaction.
No, that's, freedom is not a reaction.
Yeah, the necessity of freedom is not a reaction.
No,
so
no.
Some people would say that having been in prison, you react against it.
No. So where are we? She said, that means there must be freedom from reaction, freedom from the limitation of thought, freedom from all the movement of time. You know, all mm-hmm. that, there must be complete freedom from all that before I really understand the empty mind and all that, and order of the universe, which is then the order of the mind.
Yes.
And you are asking me a tremendous lot. Am I willing to go that far?
Well, the non-freedom has its attraction, you see.
Of course. I'm not interested in that attraction.
But when you ask the question, am I willing to go that far, it seems to suggest that there may be some, in the non-freedom, there is something attractive
of course,
that holds you, right?
I'm sure of those.
Mm-hmm.
I've found safety, security, pleasure in non-freedom. I realize in that pleasure, pain, there is no freedom, and the mind says, out not of, as a reaction, says there must be freedom from all this.
Yes, the mind is saying, yeah.
To come to that point mm-hmm. and to let go without conflict demands its own discipline, its own insight. That's why I said, those of us who have given certain amount of time, thought, and investigation into all this, can one go as far as that? Or there's the responses of the body, response of daily demand, the responsibilities of daily action, wife, children, all that. Is that what is holding me back, holding and preventing this sense of complete freedom? And the monks, the saints and the sannyasis have said you must abandon the world.
Yes. Well, we've gone into that they bring the world with them anyway.
So. That's again another form of idiocy. Sorry to put it like that. Now, we've been through all that, so I refuse to enter again into all that. Now I say, is that universe and the mind that is has emptied itself of all this, are they one?
Are they one?
One. They are not separate. They are one.
Yes, well, are you more or less... See, it sounds as if you're saying that the material universe is like the body of an absolute mind.
Yes, all right. All right.
It's maybe a picturesque way of putting
yes,
it.
Yes. We must be very careful also not to fall into the trap that the universal mind is always there.
Yes, well, how would you put it then?
I mean, they have said that. God is always there, all God, Brahman or highest principle, is always there, and all that you have to do is to cleanse yourself and arrive at that. Do all kinds of things to come there. Which is also a very dangerous statement, because you then say, there is the eternal in me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think thought is projecting.
Of course, eternal, that's but, of course, of course.
But suppose, how would you put it to say that see, there's a logical difficulty in saying it's always there, because it always implies time.
And time,
of course. There every minute, is what you mean, and we're trying to discuss what has nothing to do with time.
Nothing to do with time.
So you can't place it as being here or there or now or then, right?
So we come to a point, sir, that there is this universal mind, and the human mind can be of that when there is so when there is freedom.
Yes.
What's the question of today?
That's what time are you, all right?
We're going by time, all right.
Yeah. Well, that should be enough.
That should be enough.
Right.
We'll continue when?
You want to go next week and Saturday?
We'll see.
The Immeasurable Podcast is a project of the Krishnamurti Center, funded by the Krishnamurti Foundation of America. For information on our online community, programs, and how to support this work, please visit kfa.org.